You're listening to audio from the Cathedral Church of the Advent in Birmingham, Alabama, a church with a heart for the gospel. Find out more at adventbirmingham.org.
In life as in death, abide with us, Lord Christ. Amen. Be seated. Perhaps you've been following the Winter Olympics this year, the array of flags, colors, cheering fans, the pageantry of competition. I still can't figure out what curling is all these years later. And why is curling on TV every time I look at it? How much curling can possibly happen? I find it amazing during the Olympics. These athletes have primed their entire lives. They've been solitarily focused on being the most excellent at their craft. And they go with the emblem of USA or whatever, Canada, the leaf, whatever, on their chest, on their back, as they go out and perform on behalf of their country. Think about the pressure that it takes to represent an entire nation, an entire people. The honor and privilege, but man, the pressure. It would have me curled up, breathing, hyperventilating into a paper bag to think of that. I was captured as the Olympics approached by the nickname given to a particular athlete. He is named the Quad God, Ilya Malinin. What a name, the Quad God. And I thought, what is this guy about? And you may have seen he was a gold medal favorite for the men's figure skating going into it because he is known as the first and only skater, the only human being to ever successfully land a quadruple triple axel in competition. He is elite at his craft, and he had for him in Italy this year a catastrophic collapse last week in the men's figure skating final event. He placed eighth. Because he stumbled, he fell. He was unsure of himself. You could hear the commentator speaking over his performance, saying, "Oh, we don't usually see Ilian make mistakes like this." And the crowd was quiet, and you could even sense, it was like being at a youth sports event where the fans are just going, "Come on, buddy, you can do it." They were really cheering for this guy who's the most excellent at what he does. The dread of the announcers lamenting, "Oh no, he's missed the opportunity he has trained for." And as he finished the routine, you could tell he was in the center of the ice. Everybody's looking at him. The TV camera zooms in on his face, and he is crushed. He is devastated because he knew it during his performance. During the opportunity to win a medal, he blew it. This failure on the most important public of stages. And this week, he said in an interview this, quote, "I have been turned into dust." And I thought, wow. Who I am, my hopes and expectations, they've all just crumbled around me. I'm dust. See, in the Olympic arena of figure skating, perfection is not only required, but expected. And on the sliding scale of humanity, he is among the most excellent of skating athletes on the entire planet. And yet, his best wasn't enough when the crucial moment arrived. And we know, we talk about athletes choking from time to time, or a baseball player or a golfer having the yips, where they just can't get it right. Or maybe you remember a great Olympian a few years ago in Tokyo named Simone Biles, who suffered what was termed the twisties, right? Being up in the air. The lights on the stage are bright, and it's not uncommon to see even the best and most gifted wilt under the pressure. And you take this Olympic perfection standard and ratchet it up to, I don't know, the 1,000,000th degree, and we have the plight of the human race in microcosm. Adam and Eve, created in God's image, given everything in the Garden of Eden. Provision of a home, security, abundance of food, a warm, embraced relationship with the goodness of the loving God. And in the moment of pressure, when the stakes were highest, Adam and Eve had a disastrous quad God performance. They ate that forbidden fruit. They hid from God. And the blame game commenced. right? Finger pointing, deflecting, backing away from taking responsibility. It's his fault. It's her fault. It's your fault, not mine. Romans 5 recounts for us in shorthand the cause and the consequence of our actual condition. We are alienated. We're lost. We're condemned to die in futility. Our shared human condition is one of being turned into dust, as Melanin confessed. You know it. We know it. Ash Wednesday, just this week, it's the truth being smeared and smudged on our foreheads that we are dust. There's a Peanuts cartoon I saw once with Charlie Brown, you know, good grief, where he says, sometimes I lay awake at night and I ask, where have I gone wrong? And it says, and then a voice says to me, this is going to take more than one night. Where did I go wrong? Well, get ready. Romans 5, all have sinned. Death has come to all. It's spread like cancer, like kudzu across the landscape of our lives. Sin is personified here for us as a villain, with death as the weapon and people, you and me, as the victims. It's a pathogen that's most lethal and potent. You see, Adam committed the sinful act that led to condemnation and death. It's a legal decree of judgment. Eat the fruit, you die. It's a legal pronouncement. But Paul says, but the second Adam, Jesus Christ, the Son of God, with one righteous act, he undoes all of that. He brings about justification, and that is just a legal decree, a pronouncement of acquittal. It's the opposite of being condemned. And Christ, in our gospel passage, we saw him resisting temptation in the wilderness, witnessed there a perfection of a quadruple, triple axel performance never seen before or since, whereby humanity was plunged into sin and suffering through one act of disobedience, by the active obedience of the Son of God. And his willing, sacrificial act of love brings us salvation. And so there's this bond between Adam and you and me today. There's a bond between all of us, one another. We have a natural bond, of course. We're the progeny of Adam and Eve. We share the exact same condition as them. Yet there's also this political or forensic sense that Paul is using here in Romans 5, that we have a prince headship representative for us, a moral and federal consequence for all humanity that is ensnared in sin. So we have solidarity in our human condition. No matter what your week or month or year has been like, you're in good company. Whether you think it's fair to be represented by one individual or not, that is the truth, that we all confirm the fall of humanity in our own lives in small and sometimes larger ways every day. We have all ratified Adam's choice through our own participation. You know, G.K. Chesterton said something along the lines of, original sin is the only verifiable, observable phenomenon of theology. I think it's true. Or as the theologian Medea said, I can do bad all by myself. I think that's true. I find that true. Or if you've ever taught preschool classroom or just tried to raise children, right? You don't have to send your kids to a sin boot camp. Hey, we want to teach you how to do wrong. No. School and kindergarten is largely for what is socially acceptable and how to curb in some small way the selfish, ingrained idolatry of the human heart. And so we have that connection to the first Adam, but Paul is telling us here there's a connection to the second Adam, the greater Adam, that the second Adam has brought rescue. We're condemned in the first, but we're rescued and saved and justified in the second. Sinners mired in the fall receive a new status under the connection to the new representative head, Jesus the Christ. It's true that you are either a sinner and condemned, or you are righteous and connected in relationship to God. As in skating, as in life, perfection is what is required. And Blaise Pascal famously wrote, there are only two kinds of human beings, the righteous who know themselves sinners, and the rest, sinners who actually believe themselves righteous. See, we have been made sinners, and in the same way we're made sinners, we are made righteous by the action of another. The legal category is a backdrop from the previous chapter in Romans 4, whereby we are reckoned or imputed as a definitive claim of God, claiming and marking you and I as his very own. The gift, Paul says, is not like the trespass. As bad as the trespass is, how much more, how much greater is the gift? Where sin corrodes, the grace of Christ heals. Where sin multiplies into death, the death of Christ and the perfect righteous life lived, it overflows for us into eternal life. Adam and Jesus are alike in that their actions have implications for the whole human race. But their motivations, Paul says, are different. Different motivations. The first Adam selfishly disobeyed God, ate from the forbidden fruit, bringing the curse to earth. Second Adam sacrificially obeyed God and climbed up onto that cursed tree to take the curse into himself. First Adam brought death upon the whole human race. The second Adam restored it to life. God said to the first Adam, "Obey me about the tree. Do not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, or else you will die." But Jesus, the Son of God, was told, "Obey me about the tree," only this time it was the wooden cross. "And you will die." Adam failed to obey and brought death to everybody. Jesus willingly suffered the penalty for Adam's race, bringing forgiveness, life, and immortality. This substitution, the great exchange. Anglican preacher John Stott said, "Man asserts himself against God and puts himself where only God deserves to be. But God sacrifices himself for man and puts himself where only man deserves to be. Man claims prerogatives which belong to God alone. God accepts penalties which belong to man alone." That is the great reversal, and that is the good news for you and me today, that instead of death, we receive life. Instead of condemnation, we are justified and made righteous. Instead of earning and meriting, we are gifted freely. How much more the superabundant grace of God for sinners and sufferers, for pretenders, for the left out, the forgotten, for performance junkies like you and me, extraordinary grace for ordinarily selfish people. As I close, the Winter Olympics, when those medals were announced, Malinin went over to the gold medalist, the one who actually won from Kazakhstan, and he congratulated him with a warm hug. Minutes removed from the worst moment of his life, Malinin showed a lot of class. This acclaimed quad god, turns out, was actually quite human. What a wonderful and humbling moment of honesty. When you and I find ourselves knocked from the podium of presumed righteousness by some circumstance, by our own sin, by our exhaustion, or by a simple recognition that our best actually isn't enough. What a gift to recognize that our real position, our real identity, our true place is found not in our performance, but in the righteous and perfect performance of another, Jesus the Christ, our representative before God. And that is a medal, friends, that will not perish or elude us, no matter how shoddy our performance. Thanks be to God.
You've been listening to audio from the Cathedral Church of the Advent. If you live in Birmingham or find yourself visiting, we hope you will join us at one of our Sunday services. Find out more at adventbirmingham.org.